Catherine, thanks. And special thanks to the other symposium members, and particularly Joan Chow, for suggestions on how to improve these slides. Although the remaining errors, data-wise or visually, in the following presentation are all my own. So how well are family clinics doing? Clinics doing around chlamydia screening criteria for older women. We're going to cover the following topics very briefly. National guidelines, as Catherine mentioned, there are some that are recently out. IPP screening criteria across the 10 U.S. Public Health Service regions. In a somewhat quick fashion, we'll cover those. Going to look at a case study that we generated for this presentation of Region 10 data and looked at two data sources, family planning Title 10, chlamydia testing and other services in clinics in the Northwest, and some IPP data. And how do we stop it from doing that automatically? And I'll go faster. And efforts to improve compliance in future issues. Background. Finally, in 2006, the CDC and the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force came up with suggested guidelines for screening women. And, of course, interestingly, they set a different age cutoff. The CDC talked about screening women over age 25, the task force over age 24. The CDC had a relatively limited number of suggested screening criteria. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force had a much lengthier list of criteria, some of which were at the individual level, some of which were at the aggregate level, such as military recruits, incarcerated populations. What are actually the IPP criteria for screening older women across the 10 regions? I am not going to lay out each region's screening criteria. I cannot really rely on your patience for that. Recently, in the last year or so, the CDC has encouraged all regions to develop regional data code books, a first, which includes data elements that each region collects and the screening criteria for the region. Most regions also allow, affectionately referred to as sub-regional screening criteria. States, localities, cities, urban, rural areas have sometimes used different screening criteria than other places within their region. There is some conceptual common ground. All of the regions seem to be concerned about age cutoffs for universal versus selective screening, STI history, visit type, risk behaviors, signs or symptoms. That's the good news. The less commonly understood issue is that there is no common ground across the 10 regions, really, in looking at screening criteria. A quick review of the 10 code books, I came up with guidance that each region should test all women annually at age less than 30, 26, 25, 23, 21, and 19, and use selective screening criteria at ages older than that. Screening older women, some regions say it's not recommended. Some provide specific clinical or behavioral measures. Some provide, say, just general guidance, test if she is at risk without any specification. Others say, rely on the clinician. Great idea. We don't have any data on what that clinician relied on or, for example, what they finally thought. Past STD history. Some regions focus on chlamydia in terms of prior infections. Other regions include other STDs as part of risk criteria. In addition, when was that prior infection? Some regions use 3 months, some 4 months, some the past year. One region goes as far back as 3 years ago. There are an awful lot of measurement issues around risk criteria in the 10 regions. In terms of sexual risk behaviors, they use different time frames, 30 days, past 60, past 90, past year, or no time frame. In other words, does the client have a new sex partner? In other words, with no time frame. Some regions allow you to only choose one risk behavior among many. Okay? Others have an entire list of risk behaviors, but in a sort of compound way. Did she have A? Did she have B? Did she have A and B? Did she have C? Did she have A and C? Did she have A, B, and C? Others have specific separate individual risk behaviors. However, even in this case, there's variation across regions. Some include explicit no, yes, and don't know categories. Some have no, yes, without a don't know option. Others simply have a check mark for yes, but without any explicit no category, it's difficult to identify missing data. When risk behaviors are specified, the next problem arises in that, for some reason, regions, the risk behaviors are not included in the data set. In other regions, they're included in the regional data set, but there's a comment that the risk behaviors are not collected. And lastly, some regions include risk behaviors in their data, but indicate that they're optional. I don't mean to be depressing about this. It's just nice to have in a context that we would like to look at selective screening criteria in older women. There are just some issues in how to monitor that over time. Holly is going to talk later about her study, but she did come to some summary conclusions, such that the criteria that she has examined in the field are not well-defined, they're inconsistent, they're inefficient. We might also add that the criteria are not well-operationalized. Sometimes they're not collected, and when collected, they're not assessed in a regular routine fashion. Other issues just to kick out here, age. I could not even identify whether age is rounded or truncated in terms of calculation for regions, which would have an issue in terms of your cut points. Identifiers would be useful. If we indicate that someone should have been screened in the last year, it'd be nice to be able to access via the data whether, in fact, that was the case. It requires a unique identifier. So, in summary, around screening criteria across the 10 regions, regional IPPs and project areas have wisely, foolishly, systematically, anecdotally determined regional, state, local screening guidelines for older women via empirical, theoretical, and sometimes atheoretical approaches. We then measure none, some, or all of the criteria, use them rarely, sometimes most of the time, to assess how these criteria are working with or without taking into consideration other possibly relevant issues, such as changes in community or client populations over time, changes in test type, changes in program funding, or focus. What have we done up here in the Northwest? Up here, up there. Every so often they let me out. You should probably know it's Alaska, Idaho, Oregon, and Washington. We're going to walk through some family planning data, which is sort of a bigger context, and then focus on IPP data for about a 7-year period. And I'll explain why those 7 years in a little while. Title 10 family planning data. How many of you know about FPAR? How many of you haven't a clue? Family Planning Annual Report. The Federal Office of Population Affairs has been working the last few years to develop performance measures to allow them to monitor Title 10 client service delivery. They've come up with a large list of tables that each region in the country provides to their central office with assistance with the university, through the University of North Carolina. If you look at Table 11 and you divide it by Table 1 and you multiply it by 100, you can get chlamydia coverage. Okay? Go forth. Chlamydia coverage is the percentage of a particular female or male, in this case female, population that is served that gets a chlamydia test during the past year. We cannot do it for every age group. For example, they focus on particular age categories up to 24 and then it's 25 and older. When I looked at the data for the 10 regions, I found that coverage ranged from 23% to 41% for women 25 and older. We then did a separate analysis of the data sets sort of internally for region 10, and we found that coverage among 25 to 29-year-olds was 24% and 30 or older, 20%. In other words, what they're estimating is about a quarter of older women seen in Title 10 family planning clinics. Their documentation suggests they got a chlamydia test. Okay, now that we know approximately that they do a fair amount of exclusion ruling out up front, older women are not going to be tested, what's the proportion of the CT coverage among older women in Region 10 that actually meets screening criteria? First digression, well, it's not a digression. What the heck are the screening criteria? In 2000, we were supposed to be testing all women annually whose age was less than 25. If you were older than 24, you had one or more of the following: some sexual risk behaviors, clinical signs, if at the visit there was an IUD insert involved, whether she was pregnant, exposed to chlamydia as her reason for visit, or a prior infection in the past year. In 2003, our criteria changed somewhat. Why? I don't know. I was involved. I take some responsibility for it. I think we were trying to make it easier to follow the criteria. They were fairly lengthy, and we're hoping to also improve program efficiency. In other words, try to screen fewer women and get almost as many positives. We did an exhaustive set of analyses. Scott LaMontagne, who used to work at Center for Health Training, took lead on that and looked at a universal data set we had, stratified the analyses by test type, site type, and assessed performance based on 12 different sets of screening criteria. We went to our advisor committee and we said, what would your wish list be for screening criteria, sort of a priori, and got input from all four states. We also looked at literature. We came up with our own PET screening criteria, and we tested them all. We looked at trade-offs in terms of curves, in terms of sensitivity versus false positives, and also looked at the feasibility. If we had a good set of screening criteria, would they be able to be implemented in the field? So, when we did all that, let me just summarize that the old criteria, under that scenario, we were testing about 87%, ideally, of women in family planning and detecting 95% of infections. The new criteria excluded some of the risk behaviors and exposures to STDs other than chlamydia, in part because we were able to reduce the volume of testing. In other words, the tests that met the simpler criteria was only about 3/4 of the population, and we were still detecting about 90% of infections. And this was essentially a practical compromise. So how well are we doing given these criteria? In terms of IPP data, which is where we look at this, we put together a data set of 2000 to 2006 that essentially bracketed the change in screening criteria. I'm going to be talking about a data set that has about 132 clinics, 700,000 chlamydia tests that were done during the time period 2000 to 2006. Nearly 80% of those tests occurred in women that fell in that universal group 24 and under, and about 10% each 25 to 29, 30 or older. In addition, it's important to note that during that time frame, the region as a whole shifted its testing, and the proportion of testing among women aged 25 or older fell, which we think this is a good thing, from about 27% to 19%. Okay? I know what we don't have data on is the proportion of testing right now in other regions 25 and older. And to the extent that it is a large proportion of tests, it becomes an even more important issue for the discussion that we're going to be going through in terms of who to test and why. For women older than 24 in this multi-year data set, what percent met criteria? In 2000, it was about 51%. It fell to about 45% in 2003, in part because that was the year we simplified the criteria. And the uptake at the clinic level for the shift in criteria had a few bumps in the road. By 2006, we're up to about 54%. Essentially, half the tests that Region 10 IPP does among women 25 and older do not meet screening criteria. And it varies, and I'll go into this in more detail later. It varies by state, as you can see, and it will vary also by clinic. Does it matter whether you meet or do not fail to meet the criteria? The simple answer is yes. For women 25 and older, overall positivity was 2.8%. It was 2.2 if they did not meet criteria and 3.5 if they did. Does age matter? Yes. 25 to 29-year-olds are much more likely to test positive than those women 30 or older, 3.8 versus 1.8%. In addition, meeting the criteria and age has an impact. For women 30 and older that did not meet criteria, 1.3% were positive. for 25 to 29-year-olds who did, it was 4.7. And lastly, test type matters. In the time frame from the late 90s to about now, Region 10 went from about 13% use of NATS to approximately 70% use. And as you can see by this slide, for non-NAT tests among older women that did not meet the criteria for the project, positivity was 1.5%. If they met criteria and they were using an amplified test, it was 4.2%. Okay? We then took the 700,000 records and aggregated to 132 clinic records. And essentially, we wanted to describe what I think is sort of the underbelly of the screening compliance issue, which is there's a significant amount of variation across clinics within a region in terms of their screening compliance. And the hopeful, optimistic note is that you can do something about that. For these 132 family planning clinics, overall, about 89% on average of the tests met criteria. But there were clinics that had screening compliance for older women of approximately 60%, and though others as high as 100%. Tests among women 25 or older. The average across 132 clinics was about a quarter of tests done were in older women. However, we had clinics that tested virtually no women 25 or older, and others where almost two-thirds of their tests were done among older women. Finally, in terms of tests meeting selective screening criteria for older women, it averaged out to about 54%. However, the range is we've had clinics where meeting criteria was about 20%, all the way up to 86% at the municipality of Anchorage. Which is interesting because Alaska has very low overall compliance. We also looked at the association between percent tests meeting criteria and percent tests in women age 25 and older. And in fact, not surprisingly, it was negatively correlated. In other words, those clinics that did fewer tests among older women were more likely to be following the criteria. Okay? They were efficient. It was the percent meeting criteria among older women, though, was not associated with test volume at clinics. It wasn't that big clinics were doing more better or more poorly. Some speculations. We have been trying in an unsystematic fashion to look at screening compliance. The most rigorous effort happened in Washington State. Catherine Gudgel is presenting someplace right now around her efforts to inform clinics around not meeting screening criteria and improving their practice, and has fairly strong data to show that you can improve screening compliance if you let clinics know what is going on and the value of reducing using resources in populations where infection levels are quite low and redirecting those resources to a younger population. Oregon, Carol Elliott, family planning manager in Oregon, makes sure that when she takes a different approach, when she goes to site visits at clinics, she routinely brings up the issue of IPP screening coverage. And I'm sure she's just well regarded for doing that and welcomed with open arms. But the point is, you can impact it either at a system level or sometimes on a case-by-case basis with clinics. The big question to me is compliance an individual provider? Is it a clinic issue? Is it an agency or system issue? Certainly at the CDC and in the region, it is a resource and system issue. But from the variation we saw clinic to clinic, there are certainly things going on at the micro level where interventions may have some impact. Summary, there's significant variation across the 10 regions in their screening criteria, in data collection, and in operationalization of measures. In Region 10, the percentage of older women tested is relatively small, which I think is good news. And the number of women tested per year who are older has been declining over time, also good news. However, half the tests done in this older population do not meet screening criteria, and not meeting criteria has an impact on yield. And lastly, that there are different pathways to actually improving implementation of screening criteria. Future issues. I do not know what the history of the screening criteria decision making has been across regions. And I think historically that would be a good thing to find out. To what extent have regions used data, and you're going to hear about that some this morning, to actually identify criteria. There's a whole big issue, sort of an elephant in the room around variation and who is included in IPP. In other words, which family planning clients get into an IPP data set. Some regions and clinics cast a wide net. Okay, others will only put in a chlamydia test record if certain conditions are met. For example, if the test is funded by Title X. Data collection, I've mentioned a few times. It would be nice to be able to analyze some of the big picture issues around screening compliance. We can't do it if we don't collect the data. How big a problem is it? This is directly connected to the problem of data collection. We don't know in some areas. Finally, there has got to be, we seem to, across the 10 regions, fallen in love with the notion of sub-regional screening criteria. And that's nice that everybody is working out state or local criteria. I'd simply like to raise the question that our criteria may not be robust enough to actually be that particularly fine-tuned, fine-grained, to be useful at local, state, urban, rural areas, and that the variations across these things may not matter. Lastly, the addressing of variation within project areas and screening compliance is a major area for program improvement. We have clinics that are stars, that have understood and been able to implement who should and should not be screened, and others who, for whatever reasons, and it'd be nice to know why, choose to take a more relaxed attitude towards screening compliance. Thank you. I'm sorry, what? No. I'll be happy. I think the PowerPoints are available at some point. Ashley wanted handouts. I got no paper. But the PowerPoint should be available. Joan. Joan asked, do we have any thoughts about sort of a minimum chlamydia positivity beneath which we should stop testing in that population or in that clinic? And Joan likes the number 3.1% or 3%, and I'm agnostic. I think it'd be great to look to do a nice little cost-benefit thing. Certainly our data suggests that you better take into consideration aspects of client populations. I also know that we have enduring, for example, that we've been working on race-ethnic differences in chlamydia positivity. And if we begin to fine-tune who should or should not be tested based on positivity among older women, we could be opening up a very challenging box in terms of testing some women and testing not others. But Joan's going to figure this out in the next 6 months, I hope.